Good morning. This is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, February the 15th, and we'll start with an article with the title "Missing Security Clip Nets Trial Lag." Dateline Danville. Trial proceedings in a nearly two-year-old election recount were delayed a bit longer Thursday when one of the bags containing some of the ballots in question was discovered to be lacking a security clip after it was delivered to the Vermilion County Courthouse. Witness testimony in the case proceeded anyway after an hour delay, during which Associate Judge Mark Goodwin and attorneys involved in the lawsuit discussed the unsecured ballot bag brought from the Vermilion County Clerk's office about two blocks away. In open court, Goodwin said that the bags containing the voting records, including the ballots, had the proper security devices attached after the full recount in September 2017, except one bag that had its security device missing. This long saga originally began after the April 18, 2017 election, when a three-way race for Georgetown Township Highway Commissioner ended in a tie between the two top vote-getters, Darren Holycross, who was the independent incumbent, and Adam Hart, a Republican challenger. Both received 506 votes. Soon after the election, a tiebreaker handled by Vermilion County Clerk Kathy Jenkins declared Hart the winner. And in May 2017, Holy Cross filed a petition in court challenging the outcome, which led to a partial recount, then a full recount, and now a trial. The court briefly addressed another issue prior to trial Thursday. Vermilion County Assistant State's Attorney representing Hart and Jenkins filed a motion in January arguing that Holy Cross is no longer eligible to be Georgetown Township Highway Commissioner because he no longer lives within the township. When he took the stand later in the day, Holy Cross testified that his primary residence is in Georgetown within the township boundaries, but he has rural property south of Georgetown where he spends only weekends and some weekdays during hunting season. He provided to the court copies of his Illinois driver's license and other identification showing his address within the city of Georgetown, which is in the township. Holy Cross's attorney, Robert Day, finally kicked off the proceedings by summarizing his client's case in opening remarks, saying that evidence from the full recount done in September 2017 will show that the outcome of the election should have actually been 507 votes for Holy Cross and 504 votes for Hart, who has been highway commissioner for nearly 2 years now. The rest of the day entailed Day calling Holy Cross and several election judges to the stand, laying out detailed evidence gleaned from the ballot recounts that will support their argument for why Holy Cross should be declared the winner nearly 2 years after the election. Day and Holy Cross are expected to wrap up their half of the case today, followed by the county presenting its response. The outcome will be decided by Goodwin. And now an article with the headline, Housing Authority to File Tax Credit Application. Dateline Danville. The Housing Authority of the City of Danville will file its full application today with the Illinois Housing Development Authority for tax credits for mixed-income housing sites in the downtown area. One site, however, is not in the proposal anymore, the parking lot at Walnut and Harrison Streets. The proposal now includes 64 units instead of 70, said Jacqueline Vinson, HACCD Executive Director. We changed the initial proposed development to be more reflective of comments received during the community dialogue, Vinson said. She said the one parking lot site was removed in direct response to concerns. She said the main concerns pertain to the impact of on parking in the downtown area. Vincent said there will be no planned development on that parking lot site. The parking lot at Harrison and Walnut Streets is used for events such as the Night of Lights Parade and events at the Fisher Theater. Vincent said she felt there was majority support from the community on the overall housing project, with the exception to the one parking lot site. Some other concerns related to spreading housing to other neighborhoods instead of just downtown, density of some of the housing developments, and keeping downtown for more commercial development. Today was the deadline for the HACD to apply for tax credits with the IHDA through its low-income housing tax credit program for the proposed housing developments downtown. The HACCD already received conditional approval for a pre-application for the proposed development in November. The application passed the first round of screening, Vincent said. She said it's not 100% the full application will be approved, but it's a good sign that IHDA sees merit in new affordable housing. Vinson said IHDA will consider the proposed housing development changes as significant amendments. She said the unit changes came about, however, due to community concerns. They then discussed the sites again with their developer consultant. Vinson said they've already filed paperwork with the state for a nonprofit called Vermilion Housing Coalition to oversee the units with the HACD's commissioners to serve as the nonprofit's board members. Vinson said they can't change the IHDA tax credit application more than 10%, so they decided to change the number of units on the remaining proposed properties in submitting the full application. Removing the parking lot at Harrison and Walden Streets eliminated 26 units. All other sites were kept, changing the unit mixes as close as possible to the original proposal. 26 units at 33 North Hazel Street on a parking lot donated by First Midwest Bank to the Housing Authority. 4 units at 133 North Hazel Street, which is a vacant lot owned by the city north of the Danville Mass Transit Bus Transportation Center. 10 single-family units in the 300 block of Oak Street on land owned by the city and Cross Point Human Services. 8 units at 402 North Hazel Street, vacant land owned by the city where the former City Hall was, and 16 units at 409 North Hazel Street, vacant land behind Churchill Towers, which is partially City and Housing Authority owned. There will be 4 one-bedroom stacked flats townhomes, 22 bedroom apartments, 8 two-bedroom stacked flats townhomes with garages, 22 three-bedroom apartments, and 10 three-bedroom single-family homes with garages. Vinson said they will be working on getting final architectural renderings. Even with the fewer units, the project still is estimated to cost around $15 million as was originally proposed. The Housing Authority is expected to find out in May on the tax credit application. The applications go before the IHDA board May 17th. Between now and then, Vincent will be talking with the Danville City Council's Public Services and Public Works committees prior to the full City Council to ask the aldermen to consider via vote for the commitment of the proposed city-owned sites for the project, contingent on the tax credits being awarded. Vincent also has said this is not U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development public housing. Rents for these units would range from $330 to $450 for a one-bedroom to about $970 for a three-bedroom. 20% of the units would be market rate. 60% of the housing would be for persons making 60% of the area median income, and the other 20% of units would be persons at 30% of the median income. Vincent said if tenants lose their jobs, they are still required to pay the rent, unlike public housing. And the next article has the title, Tricks, No, Love and Treats. Volunteers write veterans Valentine's Days. 3 volunteers with the VFW Auxiliary, Diane Hawk, C.J. Wauman, and Mary Croak, as well as Jim Ellis of Rantoul, an Army veteran who volunteers once or twice a week, were brightening people's morning at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. In addition, Peggy Johnson, a volunteer, was pushing a cart around Building 98, handing out coffee, cookies, and little heart pins. Everybody is happy to see us, Johnson said as she poured coffee for a veteran. The treats are part of the National Salute to Veterans Veteran Patients Week. Other activities included Illinois State Senate Scott Bennett visited Patriots Place to pass out Valentine's Day cards and visit with Veterans Thursday. And the volunteers with the Veteran of Foreign Wars Auxiliary 454 in Bloomington greeted visitors, veterans, and staff Thursday at the VA in Danville. People accepted the handmade cards and little Debbie treats from the smiling volunteers, saying thank you, or in some cases no thank you, with those with dietary restrictions. And they included, and it also included, was a Family Feud game co-hosted by Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. and Diana Carranza, Associate Director at Eliana, was played in Building 104 on Monday. Musical Entertainment by Eric Bard was presented Wednesday in Building 104. University of Illinois football players will visit with veterans throughout the facility, visited veterans throughout the facility yesterday. As in years past, the veterans received colorful cards. The Eliana system received 5,744 cards this year, according to Jennifer Sheehan Wells, Voluntary Services Specialist at the VA. The cards came from schools, churches, veterans, service organizations, and individuals throughout the Eliana catchment area. Sheehan Wells said, We received many heartfelt Valentine Day's cards, which highlighted the community's appreciation for our veterans. The veterans enjoyed the detailed artwork on the cards and were proud to display them in their rooms. While the veterans appreciated the cards, some passed on the treats. One man said he has diabetes but would give the case to his wife. Both Hawk and Woman said they've been volunteering at the VA for years in appreciation for the care that their relatives received. I can't tell you how good they were to us, Woman referred to VA workers taking care of her late husband. It was amazing. Hawk brought her father, a Korean War veteran, to Danville from Bloomington for 6 years and was pleased with the care. This is the first time that the Bloomington Auxiliary came for Valentine's Day. Usually they come at Christmas and once a month in the spring, summer, and fall. And now on to the community briefs. And the first three or so are from Danville. And the first has the headline, Gardening Talk Set. George Hickman, or horticulture instructor at Danville Area Community College, will talk about sustainable gardening at 6 p.m. Tuesday to Vermilion County Master Gardeners at the Danville Public Library. The program is free, however. Attendees are asked to register so there are adequate handouts. Register by calling 442-8615 or online at https://web.extension.illinois.edu/registration. And the next brief has the headline, Magic Music at Library. Join the Danville Public Library for music and magic as musician Mr. Stevens and magician Greg Lushen present an afternoon of fun for the family. The event starts at 4 p.m. Monday in the first floor conference room for children of all ages under six with a caregiver. And the next has the headline, VFW Serves Breakfast. Danville Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 728 will serve breakfast 7 to 9:30 Saturday at the post, 8 Pine Street. Children under 12 are half price. And the next is from Cayuga, Indiana, and the headline reads, Meal Scheduled. The Women's Auxiliary of Cayuga American Legion will serve a chicken dinner 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, at the post. Cost will be $10 for adults and $5 for children 12 and under. And the next is from Hoopston, and the title says, Sorority to Meet. Alpha Iota Chapter of Delta Kappa Gamma will meet from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Thursday at the Hoopston Public Library. Emily Chapel will speak on human trafficking. A movie on this subject will follow. And now we go to the obituaries. And the first is for Pearl Allen Knight, 89, of rural Metcalf, who died on Sunday, February 10th, 2019. That was in Sebring, Florida. Services celebrating his life will be conducted at 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 19th at Templeton Funeral Home in Paris with the Reverend Don Pruitt officiating. Burial will follow in Embra Cemetery near Redmond, Illinois. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at the funeral home. And the next is for Eric C. Nielsen, 67, of Columbus, Indiana, who died on Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. Memorial service will be at noon Eastern Time, Saturday, February 16th, at Hathaway Myers Chapel on Pearl Street, with Father Clem Davis officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time Saturday, also at the funeral home. And the next is for Martha E. Powell, Martha Ellen Powell, 86 of Daniel, who died on Tuesday, February the 12th. A celebration of life service will be at 10 a.m. Friday, February 15th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermillion Street. Officiating will be Pastor Miles Clark. Burial will be in Bethel Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be 9 to 10 a.m. prior to the service at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation at https://www5komen.org. And the next is for Julie Ann White, 61 of Watsika, who died on Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. Per Julie's wishes, there will be no services. And the next is for Emma Ruth Fetters, Brandenburg, 78 of Danville, Illinois, who died on Sunday, February 10th, 2019. A celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 16th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermillion Street. Officiating will be William Carpenter, nephew and minister of Faith Church of Christ. Visitation will be 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to Faith Church of Christ in Danville. And now we go with an editorial, which is from the Chicago Tribune. And the headline reads, Measles Surges Again as It Finds a Weak Spot, Anti-Vax Parents. If a disease were striking children, causing rash and fever, and sometimes escalating to brain swelling, pneumonia, and even death, there would be a public demand to do something about it. America did, and measles was declared eradicated here in 2000. Now the malady is back in Illinois and at least 9 other states, with 2 cases in downstate Champaign and an alarming breakout in the Pacific Northwest, where the governor of Washington has declared a state of emergency. Blame a stubbornly resistant anti-vaccine movement driven by dangerous pseudoscience and the worst impulses of obsessive overparenting. I know what's best for my child, anti-vax parents say, and measles spreads. The World Health Organization warned Thursday of a dramatic rise in measles cases globally as parents reject vaccines for their children. In Europe, measles cases reached their highest level in a decade in 2018. Outbreaks have hit the Philippines and Madagascar. In a world of global travel, these aren't distant concerns. A months-long series of cases in New York has been traced to an unvaccinated child who caught the disease on a trip to Israel. Measles can cause lifelong effects, including deafness. It is ugly, with its blotchy, fevered spots, some of which leave permanent scars. It's highly contagious and miserable to experience. A worried anti-vaccinations parent posted on Facebook to ask whether there are any precautions she could take to protect her 3-year-old from a measles outbreak. Yes, if only there were a way. She was rightly given a social media spanking. Measles vaccine is 97% effective after 2 doses, which usually also protects against mumps, rubella, and sometimes varicella or chickenpox, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A well-vaccinated population takes on a herd immunity that hinders outbreaks. Some states, including Washington, allow parents wide latitude in skipping the vaccine. The Washington legislature is now rethinking that. Thankfully, we live in a highly immunized community, Julie Pride, administrator of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, told the local News Gazette. That's why it doesn't go wild like a brush fire. Watching plump, pure baby flesh pierced and feeling trepidation about the child's system, of how the child's system will react, can be legitimately nerve-wracking for a parent. There's no license to avoid a medical necessity that protects child and community. The right to resist comes with a corresponding responsibility to back up that impulse with rigorous research. Once more, both studies that purported to find a link between vaccines and autism have been thoroughly discredited. There is no evidence connecting the two. Seeking a second opinion may sometimes be wise. Opting out of sound medicine and public health policy in favor of conspiracy theories is not. All school children who have not yet had a measles immunization should beg their parents to arrange for them to have one as soon as possible, children's author Roald Dahl wrote in a 1980s essay promoting vaccination. His daughter Olivia, to whom he dedicated James and the Giant Peach, died of measles-induced encephalitis at age 7. Dahl was onto something. Illinois is among states that allow, quote-unquote, mature minors a voice in their own medical care. Children of anti-vax parents are visiting websites like Reddit to seek advice on how to get vaccines all by themselves. Now, that's some healthy skepticism of unwise parenting. And now another opinion piece with the headline, Debs Need to Push Back on Radicals. Outside attention has been paid to outlier Democrats making outrageous remarks. They are a small handful of House Democrats, though you'd never know it given all their headlines. The dominant names, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Pramila Jayapal of Washington, and Ilhan Omar of Minnesota are newly elected women of color. Fine, but they also ran in districts wildly favorable to Democrats, districts that in 2018 would have chosen whatever Democrat was on the ballot. Today, few would care much about what they think had other kinds of Democrats not deliver their party a House majority. These were the real Democratic heroes of the 2018 midterms. In Georgia, Democrat Lucy McBath took the congressional seat once occupied by Newt Gingrich. This is where the great Democratic hope John Ossoff lost to Republican Karen Handel in the 2017 special election. It's a district that leaned Republican by 8 points, according to the Cook Political Report. Also a woman of color, McBath won running on gun control, plus the economy and education. A former flight attendant for Delta, she lost a son to gun violence at the hands of a white man at a gas station. Her genius shone in presenting the concept of social justice to suburban voters. This isn't kids protesting in the street with signs, one male supporter, an African-American lawyer, said. This is a middle-aged black woman talking about her lived experience. Democrats gained 40 seats in the House in part because Ben McAdams in Utah, Kendra Horn in Oklahoma, and Joe Cunningham in South Carolina took districts that favored the Republican Party by double digits. In fact, 30 of their newly elected were in Republican-leaning districts. In routinely pushing highly controversial policies, Jayapal doesn't seem to understand why more Democrats don't heel to her commands. She was never too keen on immigration enforcement, but she jumped overboard with a call to pay reparations to families separated at the border. The separation policy is indeed brutish. Immigrants, including those without papers, deserve humane treatment, but sending checks to people who entered illegally. Her district may tilt plus 33 Democratic, but you know, most Democrats want secure borders. The lefties threatening incumbent Democrats not on their program should know this. They, too, can be primaried. They should also know that many Democrats, including very liberal ones, are growing tired of radical attacks on other Democrats. Many remain bitter over Bernie Sanders' savage trashing of Illinois Clinton long after she was the obvious Democratic presidential nominee. Ocasio-Cortez has far more charm than Jayapal and Omar, but her district, encompassing parts of Queens and the Bronx, is not so worshipful of her as many in the media think. Her posing happily with actress Susan Sarandon, who backed spoiler Jill Stein in 2016 and said she was glad Trump defeated Clinton, has turned a good number of stomachs. When Omar apologized for using anti-Semitic tropes, Ocasio-Cortez defended her by saying she was sorry and for having other approved views that might have passed had she not, shortly before, exchanged love tweets with British Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, much criticized for tolerating and perhaps sharing anti-Semitic sentiments within his party. But how powerful is AOC's influence, really? Do note that in the 2018 primary for New York governor, Ocasio-Cortez backed actress Cynthia Nixon over the incumbent Andrew Cuomo. Nixon lost by 30 points in AOC's own progressive district. Radical Democrats have a right to believe as they do, but if they persist in threatening Main Street Democrats who thrive outside cozy left-wing bubbles, they will learn that patience within the party is finite. Never mind Fox News. The time for Democrats to do their own pushback has come. And the next is another editorial, and with the headline, "In Virginia, Forgiveness is Embedded in History." I have long loved the Commonwealth of Virginia, and everything else being equal, I might have chosen to live there. The sheer beauty of the state's pastoral and mountainous landscape soothed a New Jersey boy's heart. Walking across the University of Virginia campus along the white pillared porticos on the lawn afforded me a glimpse of an ordered life I hardly dared imagine. And then I met this Arkansas girl at a reception in one of Thomas Jefferson's serpentine-walled gardens and never looked back. We went to hear Lester Flatt, Earl Scruggs, and the Foggy Mountain Boys at a high school gym in the Nelson County boondocks. The music, see, bluegrass and blues, had drawn me southward. It would be years before the Arkansas girl confessed that she never really liked either one. But I digress. Mr. Jefferson's Academical Village, as it's called, stands as a sort of 18th century theme park, a monument to a serene life its creator idealized but never lived. As a slave owner who wrote the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson was one of the great men of the age, and he was among history's great hypocrites. Yet today, his wife and African-American descendants, cousins all, meet yearly to acknowledge and celebrate their mutual heritage. That's Virginia. So no, it's not astonishing to me that a Washington Post reveals that Virginia's African-American favor giving Governor Ralph Northam the benefit of the doubt by 58% to 37%. They've been dealing with history's brutal ironies for 400 years. Virginians overall are evenly divided at 47% to 40% about whether Northam should be forced to resign in the wake of that dreadful blackface KKK photo in his medical school yearbook. As a historical artifact, the offending photo is both sickening and absurd. Sickening in the unspoken assumption behind blackface that African Americans are essentially clownish and inferior figures of fun. Also in the understanding that the Ku Klux Klan in their hoods and robes are an equally comical lot, socially inferior to very clever medical students playing dress-up at a Halloween party. Absurd, too, in that as recently as 1984, intelligent white people would not only think it appropriate to wear such demeaning costumes, but to publish photos memorializing the event. Amazing. However, it is also amazing to me, a Virginia grad student of the same age that Northam was when the offending photo was taken, that just south of James River, Prince Edward County closed down its public schools for 5 years in the 1960s rather than integrate. Massive resistance, they called it, and the Richmond Times-Dispatch was all for it. Most white Virginians were. The way I saw things, it was a bit like living in a foreign country. Not my responsibility. I do recall once making a remark in a class on Southern literature to the effect that I was getting tired of lamentations for the Confederacy. A high school teacher in the front fixed me with a glare. Ever since the war she began, and there was only one war, she pronounced it woe. And I'm sorry I can't finish this one because I'm running out of time. I look forward to reading with you again soon. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, September 15th.